This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Demarest, CPA with Parmelis & Associates. The fall is our tax planning season, and with tax planning comes the infamous question, can I write that off and enter random deduction here? The short answer of that is you can write off absolutely anything until the IRS finds it. The longer answer is, just because you can doesn't always mean that you should, but that's exactly what we're going to talk about this week. Before we get into that, I just want to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Remember, if you want your question answered on here or just have a question for me, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Want to talk to us about accounting and tax services for your repair shop? Shoot us a text at 301-307-5413. And last but not least, we cannot forget our dedicated sponsors. If you need to recruit top talent for your shop, give ProMotive a call. And if you need to get your back office and parts under control, give Alex at Wicked File a call. Great news. You now have a hiring partner to help you with the heavy lifting of hiring your next superstar. Introducing ProMotive, a full-service staffing solution for your auto repair shop. Visit them online at gopromotive.com. Turn chaos into clarity with Wicked File, the AI for auto repair shops. Transform invoices into insights, protect cash flows, and stop losing parts, cores, or credits to maximize your bottom line. Get Wicked File. If you work for someone else, especially in 2025, there are no write-offs. Unreimbursed employee expenses are gone. Some of you guys might remember those from your days as a technician, but whatever is on your W-2 is more or less what you pay tax for. Sure, you can write off interest, real estate taxes, maybe, but for most people, you don't have any sort of write-offs. However, it could not be more different if you are self-employed, as many of you are aware of. And if you're new to business or maybe new to the financial side of this and wanted some clarification, what we're going to talk about this week is stuff that you should absolutely write off versus what you can, and maybe some that you should probably stay away from. Disclaimer, to anyone listening to this episode, especially if you work for the IRS, I am not advocating writing anything off that is not a legitimate expense. I am not dodging taxes, but we are making sure that we are getting every single deduction that we're able to. And again, does this come down to what do you think it looks like? What is someone else? Or what is the actual tax rules on it and using these tax rules to your benefit and not the government? That's out of the way. Let's get down to the real issue here. If the IRS was to come and ever audit your business and scrutinize the expenses of your business, you're going to have to prove two things. Is this an ordinary expense for the business? And is this necessary for the business? When anyone asks me about any sort of purchase or any sort of write-off on there, again, I'm going to play devil's advocate. And in most situations in my life, the devil is the IRS. So instead of saying, I don't like how that looks, I don't like how much that costs, I don't think that this is going to be something that's okay, what would happen if we were to get audited? The first thing that I will tell people is just like I tell all of my clients, is kind of the tongue-in-cheek joke that I said in the intro of this episode. You can write anything off until you get audited. And is that to give you carte blanche to write off whatever you want? No, but it's also to kind of warn you from the other side of this. There is a ton of really, really good shop groups, coaching companies, and alike out there. You have a lot of like-minded individuals, a lot of like-minded self-employed people. Some of the worst tax advice that my clients get comes from their peers. And again, it comes down to just because that person wrote it off does not mean it's a legitimate expense. What I mean by that is this. Let's say that you're going to take an aggressive stance out there and you're going to go and you're going to spend $100,000. I don't care what it is, but it's never been audited by the IRS. You now and you go and tell someone else, well, yeah, you can write that off. It's completely okay. What you're actually saying is, I wrote this off. It has not held up in audit. No one's even seen this stuff. I will go back to the same thing. Sure, you can write anything else off, but what we're trying to write off is stuff that is going to hold up in audit. Am I on the school of thought that we should never take a stance unless we're sure that we can back it up in audit? No. And when you get into the gray areas, there's going to be some risk that the IRS doesn't agree with this. I am never, ever going to take a tax position. I don't advise you to either, that you have no defense for. That's a completely different issue. Any expense, any transaction that any IRS agencies on one of my clients, you might like it, you might not like it. We followed the rules. We documented this stuff. And again, most of the time it's going to go through on this. You might be saying to yourself, well, Hunt, if I can write everything off until I get audited, we need to kind of look into this a little bit deeper. Because as we'll find out a little bit later, this is not just about tax planning. There could be some resounding effects to this. To go back to the ordinary and necessary thing, I use kind of two examples when I teach this class and when I talk about it. But this same kind of logic could be used for any sort of expense out there. The logic that I use on this, or the examples I use, have to do with a four-wheeler or a flat-screen TV. And if you're not one of my clients, then this conversation might sound familiar. And if you are one of my clients, hopefully it doesn't. The way that most accountants deal with deductions is a lot of times optics. And generally, a lot of accountants are conservative. If you went to your accountant and said, I want to go out and buy an 80-inch flat-screen, and when I started using this example, an 80-inch flat-screen was actually a significant investment. But if you want to go out and buy an 80-inch flat screen, you go and you ask your accountant, what is your accountant going to say? Whenever I do this class, people usually get a resounding no, or the famous accountant word is, it depends. But really what should come up to it is, well, what are you going to use it for? Where is it going to go? What are you going to use it for? Because again, it has nothing to do with what it is. It has nothing to do with my preconceived notions of what a flat screen TV is useful for. But is this is going to be an ordinary and necessary expense for the business? Because a flat screen, in two different situations, one's a write-off and one's not. If you come to me and you say, well, hon, I'm going to get that flat screen, I'm going to put in my man cave at my house. That's not a write-off. It has nothing to do with the business. That is not ordinary or necessary. If that same flat screen TV is going to be put up in a training room or possibly in a shop or even in a waiting room where people are going to use that, then that becomes an ordinary necessary expense. Stop looking at what the asset is. Stop looking at what your friend called that asset and look at it for your business. Is this an ordinary and necessary expense for my business? Same thing on a four-wheeler or side-by-sides. If you come out and you say, hey, I want to go out and buy a four-wheeler, I'm going to say, okay, what are you going to do with it? Well, I'm going to use it. I'm going to ride wheelies up and down the road on it and have fun, rip around the abandoned lot that's next to my shop. That is not an ordinary expense for a shop, and that is not a necessary expense for your shop. We are not going to be writing off that four-wheeler. Now, I have that same conversation with that shop owner, and how do we make that same four-wheeler deductible? What are you going to be doing with it? I'm going to be pushing dead cars into the shop. Sometimes we get cars here that won't start. We need to get them into the shop, and I don't want my guys pushing them. Cool, that's an ordinary necessary expense for your business. We're in a place that we get snow. I got to plow the lot. All right, you got to plow for the four-wheeler? Yeah. Again, same asset, but now we have an ordinary necessary expense for the business. You can probably see how we're kind of treading on the line here, tiptoeing on this. Again, if you were ever to get audited on there and you want to prove the ordinary and necessary expense of these, the four-wheeler better be at the shop and that flat screen better be hung up somewhere in the shop for people to see. But what I want you to do is, again, shift your mindset on this. It has nothing to do with how cool it is. It has nothing to do with the name written on the side. And that's one of my favorite things here. We'll talk in a second about vehicles. But if that four-wheeler said Hunt's Auto Repair on the side or it didn't, it has nothing to do with this. Is it going to be more ordinary and more necessary with my name on the side? In some situations, yes. You can see how the maybe perceived business use could be improved. But on most stuff, it's like, we don't care if the name is on the side or not, unless it has a business purpose. And if it has a business purpose, then you don't even need the name on the side. What advantage am I really getting by writing something off? And again, this is something that I see confused a lot. All right, hon, I'm going to go and I'm going to buy that flat screen TV, which at this point, you can probably get a flat screen TV for $1,000. What is the price difference if I buy it for the business versus I buy it for my house? Personally, if I look at something like a $1,000 expense, if you want to buy a $1,000 TV, how much does your business have to make? Your business probably actually has to make around $1,200, $1,300 in order to make the money, pay the tax, and have $1,000 left over for you to buy that TV. Why are write-offs so important if you're self-employed? Because let's use that same example, but we're able to justify it as a business expense. If we're able to justify that TV as a business expense, yes, it is going to cost me $1,000, but I'm going to get to write off that $1,000, and I probably save 25% or $250. You can't just look at the write-off side because this is a big swing. It's not only are we getting a write-off if it's through the business, but if it's not through the business, we have to make the money and pay the tax on it in order to have that cash left over. So yeah, you're getting a 15, 20, 25% tax savings on the taxes, depending on what your tax rate is, but the opportunity cost of not doing it, again, could be costing you money. You can see here that leveraging expenses and leveraging it on the business side of it for expenses that you're already going to pay is probably one of the smartest tax deductions out there. You're going to spend this $1,000 no matter what. Do you want to spend it personally and cost $1,200, $1,300, or are you going to justify it through the business and take 25% off of that cost? Things that you normally use on your day-to-day basis that have a business purpose on it should be looked at a different light. One of the most common things out there that you use on a day-to-day basis is vehicles. And again, we have to make the same threshold for vehicles. Is this ordinary and necessary for your business? The most common thing that we see out there is honestly pickup trucks. There's a utility purpose to that. Plus, in this industry, having a pickup truck, yeah, it's just something that never really raises a question. I personally have never seen a shop truck get thrown out in audit. Honestly, I have never really seen a vehicle get thrown out in audit. And I've even had some wacky ones because I was originally going to put something in here like it has to be ordinary necessary for your business. But even that, I've had Corvettes get audited. I've had people with Porsches on there that got audited. The one thing that the IRS looks for. So if you have a vehicle and it's in your business right now and you want to be sure that it's going to stand up in audit, it better be registered in a business name. We honestly haven't had this happen. I've been doing this almost 20 years, and I think I've had two vehicles thrown out in those 20 years. All of those have been within the last 5 years, and both of those, as soon as they saw that my client's personal name was on the registration, the IRS did not want to hear anything else. Do not pass go. Do not collect your 25% write-off on there. If you have a business vehicle, put it in a shop name, and that is probably going to satisfy the ordinary necessary for most of you. I get it's going to cost a little bit more. I get it's a little bit more annoying to register this stuff. And there's going to be some of you out there, they're going to have to make a decision. Like, hon, it is logistically impossible for whatever reason to get into my business name. Just know in the back of your mind, you might be having a little bit of exposure if the IRS ever looked at it. But again, if you have a legitimate reason why you can't get in the business name, maybe the IRS would listen to that too. But like I said, it's something that the IRS doesn't like to see, and it's usually a pretty cut and dry one for them. The last kind of question about these shop trucks on this is, do we use it for the entire business? Yes. For tax purposes, we are going to say these are 100% business use vehicles. And again, it's never really questioned. What the IRS is going to say is, do you have a vehicle that's available for personal use? If you're looking at your household and you have four vehicles between business, personal, I should not have all four vehicles on the business. Because if the IRS ever comes here and says, you guys are using these all for business, what are you driving for personal use? You have to have a vehicle that you could designate for personal use. And then the shop vehicle designation gets a little bit blurry. Again, there is some perception as reality here. What do you think looks better? A Silverado 2500 or a new Camaro? The utility purpose, the ordinary necessary aspect of this. If you have a Copo Camaro that you registered in your business name on it, but you do drag racing and a lot of stuff in the performance world on it, that's probably a lot more ordinary and necessary than my guy with a Copo Camaro that does European work and doesn't even keep it at the shop. There's a spectrum on this, and all of you guys probably fall in that spectrum. This is black and white, and this is writing off everything under the sun. You need to figure out where you are, get comfortable with it. In a situation like the vehicle, maybe do a little bit of paperwork to shore up these deductions.
Is your recruitment process draining your valuable time and resources? What if there was a partner who could take your recruitment efforts off your plate? Look no further. Promotive is your ultimate solution for hassle-free staffing focused solely on the automotive industry. On the web at gopromotive.com. Promotive understands the challenges you face when searching for the perfect technician or service advisor for your shop. That's why we've developed a platform that takes the hassle out of recruiting. Michelle Tanzi from Euroclinic said, "I am a shop owner and recruiting new talent is so time-consuming. Promotive does the majority of the seeking and recruiting. They reach out to the candidates for you, and when they feel they are a good match for you and culture, they make the connection. They follow up throughout the interview process, and we make sure that the candidates are a good fit and the shop is a good fit for the candidates. I admire that they genuinely want both parties to win. They recruited and paired us with a solid BTech and Master Tech. Both left a dealership position and are still part of our team. We are very happy with the character and culture match, and both technicians have become valuable team members." Visit our website at gopromotive.com today and join the growing community of shop owners who have found their ideal team members with Promotive.
Every month, auto repair shops can lose over $20,000 in uncredited parts, cores, and lost profits. Wicked Files' AI-powered software is a game changer. It helped one shop owner recover over $10,000 in missed credits, and others have recovered tens of thousands more. Wicked File puts cash back into your business and hours back into your day. Stop leaving money on the table. Visit wickedfile.com to learn more and get started today. Here's a good one, kind of going on to the same thing. And this was a follow-up question when I've talked about this before. I made this note is, well, Hunt, I have a vehicle right now that my business has actually never bought. and it's in my personal name, what can I do? Let's say that you're sitting here right now and you got to pay it off, you know, 2015, 1500. And you're like, it's probably worth 10 grand on this. I don't owe anything. It's in my personal name. I drive around for the shop. How do I get a write-off for that? It's fairly simple. All you have to do is you have to buy that. The shop needs to go out and buy that vehicle. It just so happens to be buying it from the owner of the business as well. I still want to see a check. I still want to see a paper trail like anything else on there, but that's going to allow us to write off the $10,000 in cost. Are you going to have a taxable event personally? No, because you probably bought that vehicle for much more than $10,000. You do not have any gain or really any tax event on your side. This is the same thing for tools. You started your business and put your toolbox in there and never paid yourself for your tools. You're allowed to buy your tools from yourself if the shop is using this. You're allowed to reimburse yourself for anything that is ordinary and necessary for the business. Now, the one big caveat that I will say here is you can see how this is open for abuse. You're reimbursing yourself on this. So guys, if you're doing this, make sure you have a paper trail. And again, how much is that truck worth on it? Make sure you have a paper trail. You want to say it's worth $15,000 and you better print out some ads or a Kelley Blue Book coming up with that value. Is the IRS ever going to come out and say you sold it to yourself for $15 and it should have been $13? No. But if you tried to sell it to yourself for $100 and it's only worth $10, again, you probably won't even get caught. But if someone was to look in, it's probably going to stick out like a sore thumb. Just like anything on this, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. So under that same thought, let's talk about meals. And meals, again, are something that gets pretty subjective out here. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on meals. Really, the big thing on this is you guys should have a couple of different designations. First and foremost, entertainment expense is gone. So if there is a QuickBooks account that says entertainment on it, get rid of it. Because if it's entertainment, we're not supposed to deduct it. If you're one of my clients and I see entertainment, we're going to reclassify that for you somewhere else on there. But again, not all accounts are doing this. And when they see entertainment, they're probably not going to take that deduction. When did that happen? Oh, years ago. What happened when they got rid of entertainment deduction? People just started calling the entertainment something else. But the general idea on meals is this, is in most situations, you're going to get a 50% write-off for meals because the IRS says you are going to eat regardless if you're working or not, so you don't get the full write-off there. All right, I get it. There is some meals that are covered 100%. What are those and how do we split these separately? So meals is kind of synonymous in the accountant's world as a 50% write-off. If you have other things, and we usually set up an account called meetings or company functions, but there's other stuff that you're allowed to write off 100%. What kind of stuff should go into that meeting expense? If you're having birthday party celebrations a couple of times throughout the year, you're doing periodic training, you have on-site meals or waiting room food for your customers, all of this stuff should go into meetings. Meeting gives us 100% write-off on it, meals only gives us 50%. One of the most effective tax strategies is leveraging your expenses that you're already paying and trying to shift that burden from you personally to the business. This is what we've been talking about. The vehicles, the TVs, the four-wheeler, the meals. And vacation is something that, again, can sometimes closely align and sometimes get a tax benefit. If it comes down to this vacation and you want to say, well, is this vacation taxable? The IRS actually has pretty clear rules on this one. In order for this to be a business expense, you need to leave your tax home, meaning you can't just stay in the same town that you are. It needs to be mostly business. There's specific guidelines on what percentage it needs to be. It needs to be ordinary and necessary, like we talked about before, and you need to plan it in advance. That last one has kind of confused a lot of people of like, what do you mean plan in advance? You can't go on a personal travel trip and then just go around and visit shops informally and technically call that a business travel. Now, will most people classify the airline trip, hotel as travel expense anyways? Yes, but if you're really trying to make sure and shore up these deductions on this, the IRS gives out very good guidelines on the percentage, the bookends, and all kinds of stuff like that. But the basic idea here is if you live in Seattle and you go to Southern California to spend some time at the beach and sightseeing, that is not a business deduction. But if you plan ahead, and you're going down to Southern California to sightsee, and you're going to meet up with some fellow shop owners, review some procedures, equipments, maybe some techniques, and do that for at least half the trip, that is now a 100% write-off. Again, guys, look at this stuff. It is probably not changing your behaviors, but a lot of this is changing your documentation and your thinking on some of these transactions. Not as common. Most of the shop owner forums and meetings and stuff are domestically, where you have to have the majority, 50% or more, be business. But if you travel outside of the country, I know Transformers did this a couple of years ago. We went to Mexico. It only has to be 25% business. So if you go for 4 days to Mexico, One day is business, 3 days are not. Again, 100% write-off. Now you guys understand why these coaching companies generally do their conferences in a destination location. Yes, it's better for you guys to get there, but they're also shoring up your tax deductions as well. Long story short, though, if you're traveling for an automotive conference, 20 group, and anything like that, this is all going to be 100% write-off. This is all education on it. The meals that go along with it, some of the per diems and stuff like that is where you get into gray areas. But the actual travel itself for real business travel is never something that I would ever kind of be worried about. So the last kind of category we get into before I start to give you guys some words of warning on this is supplies / funds. Office supplies is a notorious dumping ground of gray area expenses. Now, those Walmart charges for your personal, or are they for the business? Or the Amazon for your personal, or is that for your business? You have to realize that most of these charges that the IRS is looking at, they're really only picking up on the vendor names. If you were to get audited by the IRS, we're going to have to give a general ledger, which means every single transaction of your business for a certain time period. Most of the time, what flags them is they see a vendor name and amount. They see stuff like Home Depot, Walmart, Safeway, Giant Foods. Is that going to flag anything on their side of it if the amounts aren't that high? Probably not. But the higher the expenses are, the higher the chances that someone's going to start asking questions. And again, if the vendor looks strange or doesn't look customary for the industry, that's going to raise a lot more flags than something that does. At the end of the day, when you're looking at this and you're trying to figure out if this is going to stand up in audit, it's ordinary and necessary is going to be the threshold that you have to pass. But the fact that you're getting audited and the fact that you're having to justify this could also mean that you kind of maybe got a little aggressive along the way and raised some red flags. And this leads us into our last category, which is the dark side of gray area expenses. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the first thing on here, which is audit risk. The larger you get into the gray area, the more aggressive that you get on your tax position and deductions, the higher the likelihood of getting audited are. I don't care who you are, but if you put $200,000 in repairs and maintenance, you have a much higher audit risk than $20,000 in repairs and maintenance. IRS, just like you guys, is looking at return on investment. If they see an expense category of $1 million, they know that they can generate probably 200 grand by getting rid of half of that. If they see that your expenses are only 20 grand, how much do they have to gain? Anytime, the more that you're writing stuff off, the higher your audit risk is. Now, the caveat to all of this is audit risk right now is probably the lowest it's ever been. I think last year of the 1,000+ returns that we did, we maybe had one true audit, and that was kind of a unique situation. This is not to tell you guys to do whatever you want on it, but if you guys perceive the risk of audit as extremely high for income tax, then the propaganda machine at the IRS is working well. You will get a sales tax audit probably in your business career on it statistically. You will probably not ever get audited by the IRS, again, statistically speaking. Talking about statistics, though, one of my biggest pet peeves about you guys trying to run your personal life down through the business is adding variables to your financial statements. I cannot stress this enough that if you do not understand your financials, try and keep your personal life out of here. And I get it, you're trying to leverage the tax benefits. I get it, you're trying to lower your tax bill. But a lot of people don't understand their numbers because their numbers are not their business numbers. That's their business and their personal life. The most common thing on it is, huh, margins look good. Labor is looking good. Parts are looking good. I'm just not making any money. My overhead is just sky high. And what I realize is, yeah, your overhead is 45% of your sales, which is leaving maybe 5% for profit, but half of those expenses are really your personal life. And then what we're trying to judge here is your business doing well, but you're just sucking all of these out of kind of gray area expenses? Or do we really have a lot of legitimate expenses in this business that's just not performing well? Kind of on the same vein of that, if you're hurting your ability to look at these financials, do you think that you're hurting your finance opportunities? You cannot have your cake and you want to eat it too. You want to play with this. You want to lower your income so that you show zero money for taxes on it. Why are you mad when the bank comes back and says, we're not going to give you that loan? You haven't shown that you made any money. You want to sell your business on it? Should you cut out all of this stuff? No, but the smaller things I would. It's very easy to go back and say X, Y, and Z. My business covered my health insurance. My business covered my cell phone. My business covered my truck payment, whatever it was. But just like we're talking about for expenses, the more and more ad backs that you're going and asking of a buyer, I know it shows I made 100 grand, but believe me, I made 500,000. What do you think is going to be more valuable to someone? What do you think that they're going to have more confidence in? A business that showed 400 grand in profit and really made 450 with a little bit of an adjustments, or a business that showed $50,000 of profit with 400 grand of adjustments still claiming the same net income. I'm not of the school of thought if you're selling your business, you should cut out all of this stuff altogether, but on the same flip side, it probably wouldn't be a bad idea. At the end of the day, leveraging the benefits of being self-employed is a common and extremely helpful way to minimize tax exposure, but within reason. Going overboard on expenses will not only make you lose sight of your true business operating costs, as well as probably overall lower the value of your business at the time of sale. Remember, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, proceed with caution, and no one wants unnecessary attention on their business, especially not from the IRS. As always, please share with friends. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Just want to say thanks again for listening on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all shows on the aftermarketradionetwork.com and on your favorite podcast listening apps. Thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.